Oh, yes. I am here. I am the proud owner of 97 pounds of pumpkins in multiple pumpkins. But that's what we did last night. We went to the pumpkin patch. We got the pumpkins. We haven't carved them yet. They're inside the house because I live in Minneapolis and our squirrels are vicious predators. And they will eat your pumpkins if you leave them outside. All right. So what else? What else starts with the letter P? We're running a little Sesame Street here. Pizza. That's what does. So here's what's going on the show today. I have Jordan Smith, the Black Sheep Pizza founder, Pizza King. We're going to talk about how you managed to conquer the pizza universe inside a fairly well-saturated pizza town. So Jordan Smith is here. Later on in the show, we've got Mike Phillips, Red Table Meat founder, the greatest salami maker the cities have ever seen. But do we appreciate him enough? Are there going to be holiday platters at the new place? We got all the things. All right. As ever, you can text or you can call in 651-989-9226. All right, Mr. Jordan Smith, I've been trying to get you on the show for months. You've been a busy, busy, busy man, but I'm happy that you're here now. So a lot of people maybe don't know that you are large. You have a big hand in establishing the restaurant scene we see before us. Before you opened Black Sheep Pizza, the runaway coal fire success, you opened a bunch of other places.
Oh, I've been opening restaurants for decades. It turns out it's the thing I love doing best, maybe after eating.
All right, so you opened a string of the
D'Amico and Sons.
The D'Amico and Sons.
Worked with those guys for a long time, opened restaurants here and in Florida, and then worked with the guys. What was that place? We opened a Kababi, and we opened Mission, American Kitchen. I was partners on that deal.
Best veal chops ever. All right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that pan-fried veal chop was awesome. That's
so
great.
Good.
Yeah.
It is the best. I think it's the best I've ever had. And then I always think of kind of Black Sheep as like you learned how to do something as good as anybody can do it. And then you went out on your own and you showed like, oh, this is what we do when we have no constraints. And Black Sheep Pizza, the first one was in Washington Avenue in downtown Minneapolis. Coal fired, 800 degree blue anthracite coal. I remember all the things.
You know everything.
I want to kind of just get us up to the present. You opened two more, one in St. Paul, one in on each street on 26th Street. And so the first question, how did you do that? How did you build a better pizza? That was the thing I want to get to first.
Oh, thanks. First off, I love pizza. My first real restaurant job was working in a pizza joint. My wife and I were always traveling, especially going to New York, and our break would be for meetings, like going to a wine tasting, right? It's like you're drinking wine all day. What are you going to have? Like, I can't have another glass of wine. So we'd be going to all these sort of high-end restaurants and ended up eating in these coal oven pizzerias. And my favorite ended up being Patsy's up in East Harlem. And I just fell for it. And I'm complaining about the pizza scene at that time in this town. And she said, you should open another restaurant. I'm like, oh, what a terrible idea. But the seed was planted and we started working on it. Maybe 6 months or 8 months later, we ended up opening Black Sheep. And it is the most fun I've ever had running restaurants. It's a gas.
Because you get to choose where the money is spent. I think that's the thing, right? People don't understand because when you're working for someone, they have their own ideas and you got to just execute them.
Exactly. They're it's their deal. They're running the show and when you're running your own thing, it's great. And also there's this idea like, you know, as Minnesotans, and you see it, like you go to a Chinese restaurant, people don't even share what they order in a Chinese restaurant, right? They're like, this is my fried rice and that's your whatever it is.
Really?
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's crazy. But pizza, you're almost forced to share. So it's sort of this communal thing that happens in a pizzeria too that I really dig. Like, we're going to get a pizza and you're going to have some of this. And I really like that. That's a big part of the fun.
Okay, so the reason I had you kind of schedule this at first is that you're kind of refreshing, updating the other locations, right? That's what you're up to. You were saying in the green room before we got out here that restaurants just kind of get worn out. I hadn't thought about that. Certainly 100% true.
Oh, for sure. You know, and we always say, oh, this place is getting tired looking. You know, you go in there and the corners are worn off everything and If it's a 100-year-old bar, that's a great look. But if it's a place you want to sit down, you got to kind of freshen it up so people can tell you care about it, actually. And so we did
Or just booths and things will just get busted up. You know, you'll be in a happened to me a number of times. You go into a restaurant booth and you're like, oh, these springs are not right anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're refreshing the two.
At the end of the day, we've done all three. We did the expansion, I don't know, I think 3 years ago at the downtown North Loop location. And that was ended up being like a new restaurant. We were done. We did St. Paul first part of the summer, which was great. Added a full bar, which we hadn't had before. And it really feels nice in there. And right now we're in the process of working on the East Street location.
And so what are you doing there?
At the East Street location, we are actually putting in a whole new floor, which is a remarkably expensive endeavor at the end of the day, but it's going to really make it look nice. The floor in there is cool in that it's a 80-year-old terrazzo floor, but we've been cleaning it for 5 years, and it's just not quite enough. So we're going to do that, paint, refresh some furniture, and we're going to add sort of a loungy party room.
Oh, all right. I like a party. So what's do all three of the Black Sheeps, because you're kind of famous for the coal fire pizza. Are they all coal fire pizza?
Yes.
And how do you do that? How do you make it work? I mean, because it's like I have no idea. You can't put that just in your house. There's special venting, all these things, right?
Oh, yeah. Coal's really a pain on a day-to-day operational basis in that, unlike wood, it doesn't really want to burn. It needs to burn in a specific coal burning oven that has what's called a plenum. So it's always blowing air through the coal to make sure it stays lit. Also, it's not intuitive. You look at a fire and you want to throw a stick on it because you need more fire. With coal, you have to anticipate. If you put the coal on as it's dying down, you just snuff the fire out.
Oh.
That's a very painful lesson. Yeah, you're like, oh, crumb, it's 7 o'clock on a Friday and I just put out the fire. Yeah.
And this is a big part of American heritage. If people have never had a coal fire pizza, this was kind of how cities ran in the late 1800s.
Oh, for sure. And actually, there is this beautiful intersection of technology and Italian immigrants coming in to New York and the environs, where at that time a coal oven was the most sophisticated oven you could have because it would hold temp longer. It's hotter, depending if it's a black or white oven, it may or not be cleaner. And then these Southern Italians started coming in with this pizza culture, and this oven, because it's so dry and so hot, turns out to be a spectacular environment to make a pizza fast.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is the dry and the hot. That's what makes the inside poof up, and then the outside gets hard, yep. And it traps in all the moisture. And that's what makes that airy, light, like all the things that you want in a pizza
exactly.
crust that you can't get otherwise. Are you the only coal-fired pizza in the state? I feel like you must be.
I think we are, yeah. There was one, I think, that opened a few years ago in White Bear, but I don't know that they're still there or not. But that's us. You can go to Des Moines or Chicago.
It's very specialized. So it's if people don't know, it burns hotter than wood or gas can, like a standard pizza deck oven, the slice shop, the kind of one that like a big thing dwarfs, folds down, and it's very
right,
wide.
Right, the big deck oven, yeah.
Big deck oven. That thing is not get as hot, though it does get hot. Mm-hmm. And then the wood fire oven also, it just doesn't burn that hot.
Not as hot as a coal oven does. I mean, my goodness, I think it burns around 1,800 degrees, the coal does. And it's...
1,800?
Yeah, it's
that's
crazy.
A lot. That's like
well, that's not how
smelting.
Hot the deck is. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like you can, if you're like trying to put color on the top of a pizza, like you can light mushrooms on fire up on the dome because it is so hot, the heat rolling over the top of that oven. It's crazy.
So what's a learning curve on training a new cook onto one of these things?
It's a very demanding job to keep the pizzas moving and physically because you're working all day. You should look at these pizzaiolas around town, not just at our place, but they kind of end up getting a set of shoulders on them because they're working all day long, working that peel in and out of that oven and just keeping it moving. And also for us, you have to get the oven hot enough where there's sort of a fear factor as the cook. Because if you turn your back on it, it's gonna char just like that. And you want some black on it because that gives you that flavor between that contrast between bitter and sweet. You know, and a line cook's nature is to play it safe, so they want to drop that temperature down just a little bit so it's a little bit easier.
You're like lion tamers as far as pizza ovens go.
That's right.
All right. So that's what's going on at the different black sheeps. And then I'm just going to kind of go back to this question, because it seems to me that the build a better pizza question is just always interesting to me, because we've seen a certain arms race in the Twin Cities in terms of like more wood-fired oven, crazier ingredients for putting fresh clams on it or whatever it is. I don't know that people want fresh clams. I keep seeing more and more fresh clams on pizzas. I think it has to do with the clam supply chain becoming more robust, but I don't know. We're having a clam pizza moment here in the Twin Cities. And so tell me about that, because you've been pretty – you're pretty – I don't want to say traditional, but it's like you kind of came up with some pillars, farmers market vegetables and mushrooms and things in season, and the kind of top quality ingredients. And you kind of stick with those pillars, right?
We really do. The idea behind the restaurant at the front side is, so we're going to these New York pizzerias, and they've been there for generations. And that's what I want. Like, I want your kids as our customers. We really want to be there. When you come in, and like if you're getting a cheese pizza or the meatball, ricotta, whatever your jam is, we want it to be consistent and regular and there for you when you come in. And we make lots of changes to the menu. We're always tweaking and trying to improve. But when you come in, we want it to feel really familiar for you and then for your kids. And when they come back, and we're already seeing that happen because we've been around 11 years now, and that's a chunk of it.
So I put a call out for questions to everybody. Of course, you can all text 651-989-9226. Of course, I've got the complaining about North Loop being so under construction and so hard to park in right now. What are you seeing in the North Loop? You've been there a long time.
The North Loop just gets busier and busier and busier. And thank heavens, for that chunk of it. And what my wife and I are doing all the time, we're Ubering. There is, if you're willing to walk a block or two, there's now a new lot springing up here and there. So we're, as a neighborhood, we're working on the parking issue, and it's all over town right now. Wherever you go, Eat Street, or wherever you want to go, it's tough to park, I think.
But you're still getting customers. People aren't staying away from – I feel like I was walking around in the North Loop the other day. It was full of people.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't think people are staying away. I hope they're not staying away. My gosh.
Yeah, and you've got Isaac Becker coming on your block with pizza, so it's going to be a new pizza magnet. People are going to have a hop from Snack Bar to Black Sheep and back again.
That'd Absolutely, yeah. We were actually in there a week ago, and it was great. Really, it's really a fun spot.
I went for the first time the other day. It is nice. It is. I thought it was going to be more of a pizza place. It's actually a restaurant. It's an Isaac Becker fancy restaurant.
It really is.
That also has pizza.
Yeah.
All right, this has been Talking to Jordan Smith, Black Sheep founder. You were saying before you want to be a place that your family goes. You're literally a place my family goes. We get the meatball appetizer. That
nice.
Is delicious. And then we just go for a straight up pepperoni. I think you do the best in town. So that's my favorite. That's what we get.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in. All right, everybody. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about, I think that making pizza at home is sort of a fool's errand, except one exception, which are kind of the grandma sheet pan pizzas. And we'll talk about those when we get back, because this is the thing that I do think the pizza you can make at home is just a skillet or the sheet pan, the real thick old Sicilian. Now Jordan Smith is still looking at me because he's still here. You think I'm crazy or you think that's
No,
that?
I think you're exactly right. We make a Sicilian. I say to people it's the best thing to
that's
take
right.
home and heat it up because it'll actually turn out great. But, yeah, people say, I want to make a pizza like yours at home. It's like, I'll give you every ingredient we have and you just can't duplicate that.
Yeah, and people spend their whole lives. I think the biggest flim-flam game is the marketing of pizza stones. Those things don't work.
Oh, no.
They're just nonsense, and they
Have
break
you seen
all the time.
The thing where guys or people are, you can go into an electric oven and take the controls off it and get it up to over 800 degrees.
No, that seems like
and
something
burn your
you
house down.
Not that's exactly what I was thinking. Do not tell your State Farm agent about this. Yeah, I hear about people like, I figured this out. I filled my oven with bricks. Then I had it at 500 degrees. Then the oven rack collapsed and smashed the elements. It's like, you are figuring it all out. All right, we gotta go. But we're gonna come back with some grandma pizza recipes and soon Mike Phillips from Red Table. Dara here. You know, when I was a kid, we had to make do with English muffin pizzas. It was a hard time. We got crumbs all over the kitchen. But now we live in a more elite foodie world, and we can have actual grandma pizzas. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about basically making a loose kind of a focaccia dough, something with some olive oil in it, springy like that because it's got the oil in it. Smushing it. That's a professional word that we use. Smushing it into the large pan.
Is that year three of culinary school?
Yes. When you've learned, you've mastered a number of things, you get just smushing. And then you smush it into the pan, and that's the best pizza you can make at home. Okay, so I've got five of these recipes, my favorite, are up at WCCORadio.com. It's linked to my Facebook, Dara.Grumdahl. It's linked on my Twitter, at Dear Dara. If you're persistent enough, you can call up Jonathan and pester him. He'll tell you them ingredient by ingredient. But these are the best. Okay. Cast iron skillet focaccia with tomatoes and olives. All right. So I am a vintage cast iron collector. You only have to collect them one time. Unless something terrible happens. That's a lifetime purchase. And I love this recipe. It's kind of idiot proof. So you just get your skillet hot. You scooch and smush your dough into there. It's really hard to goof this one up. And then you put stuff on top. Yes, you can do this. It's not hard. All right. So then I got a more advanced level. This is a Serious Eats. It's a website that's very persnickety about ingredients. And they did a good job of coming up with a very wet olive oil dough. And then you put a whole bunch more oil in the pan. And that's how you do it, because it kind of fries while it's in there. And so that's a beautiful recipe. That is up. I got a good old name-dropping recipe for you. Tony Gimignani is a Brooklyn Sicilian pizza master. I put a link up there to a YouTube tutorial, and Andrew Zimmern put the whole recipe up on his website from Gimignani's Pizza Bible. So really nice. Good old-fashioned Sicilian pizza. I don't know why nobody puts enough olive oil in their pizza recipes, but I have found the ones that do. All right, I always get a little bit of people who are like, but I can't eat this and I can't eat that. So here's one for you people who can't eat any grains and don't want gluten. A cauliflower pizza crust. So I put that recipe up just for you. You know, it's all cauliflower and cheese, and the cheese blended in gets it crisp and makes it taste more like food, not just like a cauliflower, because, you know, cauliflower's got a bunch of liquid in it. You got to counteract that somewhere. So parchment paper is the key to making this one work. And then finally, Bon Appetit magazine, which I've written for now and then, they did a just spectacular roundup. I put a link to this of, like, every grandma pizza recipe. So you're kind of fluish, you're sitting on the couch, you want to just feel happy, click through this slideshow. It's really good. And I put the link to this if you don't want to do that, just your basic classic mozzarella grandma pie. Grandma pies, underrated. Everybody should make them. They're very, very good. All right, we're going to take a little break. We come back, we're going to have Mike Phillips from Red Table Meats. Here. All right, so what is going on everywhere? All right, so here's what's going on. So at MSPMag.com right now, I have my big review of the month is about Kieran's Kitchen. This is a place up in the food building in Northeast Minneapolis, and it's kind of like a super group. If I knew more about super groups, I would talk to you now about them, but I really don't. But I do know that kind of the greatest charcuterie maker in the history of the great state of Minnesota works out of there. That's Mike Phillips of Red Table Meats. He's here. One of our greatest bakers and millers, Steve Horton of Bakersfield Flour and Bread, he is there. Ian Gray, who we have put on the cover of the magazine, he's a great chef, and he's running the little kind of counter service kitchen that just cooks really way above the, you know, what you'd think. You kind of peek in, you're like, oh, it's just a little deli counter-ish thing. But no, it's spectacular. The pastas are amazing. It's the breakfast sandwiches are terrific. So all this is happening up at Kieran's Kitchen, but I don't like to repeat myself. I have that all in the magazine. You can read the review at mspmag.com. What I really wanted to do is talk to Mike Phillips, because he has been in a lifetime journey of great meats. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about it. the Kieran's Kitchen is sort of your showcase, your marketing arm, your play. Like, what is it to you? Because you make these great hams, salamis. They're big in California. They're big on Chicago. People here do not support them enough because I don't know why. Red Table Meats. Get out there and support Red Table Meats, people. If you haven't had the ham royale, you're missing out. But what is Kieran's Kitchen to you, you know, the charcuterie master?
Well, it's a great place. I mean, it should be like the place where you go to get Red Table Meat that should be served the way it should be served, always. Like, it should be the flagship sort of restaurant that really touts Red Table, and it touts Alamar, and it touts Bakersfield. But they should know, and they do know, we work real close with them, how things should work. I mean, great sandwiches, make sure the meat's sliced fresh. The meat that goes out on the board gets sliced right there every time that an abundance board goes out. It's not pre-sliced, and then someone throws it on a board, and it's all dry and salty and gross.
So that's kind of – is that we don't have a culture of knowing how to do it. Like, people may think, like, oh, I can just cut this stuff last Thursday and it's going to be delicious today. That's not true.
It's not necessarily untrue either. It will be fine. But to be at its peak, we like to slice it super fresh, of course. We like young, fresh salami. That's something I learned from old Swiss butcher Francois Vecchio, who taught me pretty much everything I know. And we like to cut it thick, and people like really dry salami that you have to cut super thin with a knife. And we're trying to show Minnesota and really the rest of the world. So we could bring, say I have a distributor in LA, I could say, hey, why don't you come to Minnesota and come to Kieran's Kitchen? And you can really see how the products are utilized. And then you can think about what little restaurant or what little deli that should go in L.A. Or if there is a deli or restaurant in L.A. that you think should come here and actually really understand how this stuff should get served, then that's what we can do.
So for you, it's sort of the Tiffany's boutique then. Like, you know, like, we're Tiffany's. We make this jewelry. You want to see what it really really looks like, come on and see it in velvet, like that. So, and also for people, like, they can come and experience it if they've heard, like, oh, Minnesota meat is the best in the world. As I keep telling you, if they've heard that and they're like, I don't believe it, they can go and see, you know, taste it themselves. And
yeah, it's like a tasting room for, I mean, if you were at a winery or if you went to some cheese making place, just like we have, it's a tasting room for all those products that are made here regionally and have some expression of here.
Oh, that's interesting. So think of it like you go to Sonoma or Napa Valley, and you go and you go to the tasting room and you taste the things. That's what. Oh, I didn't think of that before. That's what it is. Like, we can go and have a ham tasting because that's delicious.
You'd have the ham tasting, and you'd have it at its peak and what it's best. And the people there who understand it and understand the best expression of it will tell you, well, here's how to use it. Well, it's going to be really good in this pasta, or it's going to be really good on that sandwich, or.
You know how happy I would be if tourists would come to town and people would take them to Kieran's
yes.
Kitchen, like instead of going to a Sonoma wine bar, you just go and have, because that's the thing, is that we have the best farmers, because you get your meat from right here.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it, is that we've always wanted to be that place that says we are Minnesota. This is what regionality is. And if you're coming from out of town to Minnesota, you should go there because it's going to be an expression of Minnesota. But you should take products home and say, this is what I got when I was in Minnesota. Just like if you went to Sonoma and you bought a case of wine to bring home or something like that, you know.
I did that. I totally smuggled some. Don't tell the.
Absolutely.
Don't tell anybody. I smuggled some things home from Italy in my day.
Absolutely. In the socks. That's how it came home.
That's sure. What dirty laundry is for.
Absolutely.
Anyway, it's a long story, but or an illegal story that we're not going to tell too much. But also the one thing that I've wondered about is the kind of super groups. I kind of thought, like, oh, Ian Gray is so smart because he's like set this whole, he's got this great restaurant where he gets to be the chef, but then he has the sous chefs of people's dreams, you know? So he's got you on one hand, you know, kind of bringing him, like, things you've been working on the side. And then he's got Steve Horton, the Bakersfield guy, bringing him little things on the side. And so it's like, and then I was thinking, well, actually, maybe Ian's the sous chef and Mike and Steve are the chefs, or, you know, whatever it is.
The puppet master.
Yeah, exactly. However it's working. Yeah. But that's kind of another thing that goes on, right, is that you are playing and you can't sell to a grocery store. You know, you can get Red Table Meats at a bunch of grocery stores, the co-ops, all kinds of places, but you can't go through that USDA approved, you know, distribution channel, but you can make up a little bacon and bring it over there.
Absolutely. So we have what's called USDA retail exempt, meaning that we can sell to the end user right at Karen's Kitchen. It's our restaurant, basically. So it's our retail spot. So we can make all kinds of things that we are interested maybe in distributing through USDA, and we'd go through a process to get it out through USDA. And we could just make stuff that we like to make. That's fun.
I came in once and you had made this insane looking cheddar wurst. It was just like a classical cheddar wurst. It was as fat as a water bottle. I mean, it was just so funny and round and just like, I don't know, just did it for kicks, I guess.
Well, we did it because they needed a sausage for a sausage platter. And we're like, oh, can we make a cheddar wurst? I don't know. And the first iteration we made was with Prairie Breeze, which is a fantastic cheddar, but we have since switched to Alamar's cheese curds.
In oh, so right in the building there.
So the whole thing's from the building, and the cheese curds are actually really amazing in the cheddar wurst. It's super creamy. I don't even get it. I don't know what the science behind it is, but it's this weird super creamy cheddarverse thing, and we're just making it there. We're not going to try to market that thing on a larger scale. It's just like go to Karen's Kitchen to buy these things.
Okay, so they got to go and get that sandwich. I raved about it in the magazine. This just, I think they call it the Northeast Sub or something. It is the best sandwich. Like it is a, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, what am I doing with my life? I'm not eating that sandwich right now.
Absolutely. I think it's a great sandwich. It showcases the meats well. And they have opportunity to make all kinds of stuff like that there. For me, the best sandwich in the world is simply bread, butter, and whatever meat we want. So salami, speck, anything like that. I'm always the person who's going to say, just put it on bread with butter and leave it like that.
I got to get you to make a mortadella on white for my kids. That's a
fried bologna sandwiches.
Not even fry it, just straight up. And so you said there's some things that are coming to Kieran's Kitchen for holiday. Like we're trying to, you know, get people to get on board. Minnesota, best meats, experience it in your face, Italy. Get, you know, like, and so you guys are going to do a big push this holiday and you're going to be able to like pre-order, or how is that going to work?
Yeah, there'll be holiday platters, which will feature the meat, the cheese, all this amazing fermented pickle stuff that they've been doing at Kieran's Kitchen. The refrigerator is so full. There are pallets full of jars of pickles in that refrigerator right now. So all that stuff goes on the board, and you get a couple of loaves of bread. And, you know, I think they're doing them for, like, iterations of 12 people. You can get it for 12. You can get it for 24. You can get it for 36. Order it right from them. Pick it up, or it can be delivered, as far as I know.
Delivered? What?
Delivered.
Oh,
yes.
Wait. That's breaking news. Mm. All right. I may just give up on the whole Thanksgiving turkey this year. I got a busy week. I just have some salami.
Great holiday party stuff, for sure.
And so how's things been? I mean, I've talked to you over the years. You guys launched – when did you launch this all? It was –
2014.
I did a Twitter thread the other day about, you know, what restaurant do you miss the most? And a bunch of them came up, and Chet's Taverna came up a few times. So that was – in my mind, that's where this all started. So you had Chet's Taverna, a little restaurant in Northeast. And is that where you started experimenting with charcuterie, or was it –
Yeah, I would say even back at the Modern Cafe when I was chef there, we started doing
– Oh, yeah, that came up on the thread a few times too. People were Modern Cafe. There's certain restaurants I can't really admit aren't there anymore. It, like, hurts me. It's just like, oh, yeah, that's – somewhere I can visit. All right, so it started there, and then you opened Red Table officially.
I left. I was working at the Craftsman in 2010. I left there. We started incubating it in the pubs with my partner, Kieran Folliard, and then looking for space, found it, built it out. 2014, we were officially making the Royal. I think was the Jambon Royal was first product rolled out.
Is that still your big... Is that still the big mortgage lifter, the Jambon Royale?
It sure can be. I mean, poundage-wise, it's the most that we sell because it's just big.
It's beautiful. So this is this kind of lightly cured ham, and you get slices of it, and then you've got this beautiful fat on the side, and you can either eat the fat, which is delicious, or you can save it up and then fry things in it like eggs, and my goodness, my friends, That's living.
That is living. It's a fantastic ham in the style of a French ham, Jambon Royal, cured for about a month, I guess, and then some light smoke and cooked for 10 hours. We love it. We don't get to eat it, unfortunately. Everybody else gets to eat it.
Oh, I think you get to eat some of it. All right, so it's been around 5 solid years of this. And what are you seeing? Are people kind of getting on board? When I talk to people, I almost sometimes feel like California is more on board than Minnesota is.
We do a hefty business in California for sure. It's a more crowded market than it was 5 years ago, and specialty meat in that way has come a long, long ways.
More crowded in Minnesota or more crowded nationally? Interesting.
I mean, in Minnesota too, there are folks who have brought their brand to Minnesota that crowds up our market here a bit too. But all good, you know. They're fantastic producers. Just that we're at that point where, you know, all of a sudden we have more makers than the market can bear, and so it'll go back and forth for a little while until people are buying more salami. But yeah, absolutely, East Coast, West Coast, there are traditions there that people sort of understand, and food things that people will pay for, and there's just a lot of money there.
That's true. Their houses are expensive, and their lifestyles are expensive, and they can afford the greatest meat in the world, which is from Minnesota. I will just keep saying that. I just think it's true because we have beautiful green pastures and some amazing farmers. And it's important that their work is showcased and not just kind of put into the giant grinder with the lower quality meats of North Carolina. So, yeah, I'm on fire today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big thing. The pig farming in Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, South Dakota is probably larger than almost anywhere in the world, really. And we have various degrees of farming here, and good farming and bad farming, and we're trying to pick out the good stuff. And one of the new things we'll probably try working on is a little bit of wild fermentation, just to see if we can really bring in that terroir to making a regional product.
Yeah, a lot of people maybe don't know that salami is a fermented product. That kind of bloomy white part that you see on the outside,
yep.
That's just like similar to the bloomy white part you see on the outside of brie.
Absolutely.
Like that's what that is.
It's fantastic. Protects casing, lets the salami dry the way it's supposed to dry. It's great stuff.
I got a baffling case of food poisoning a bunch of years ago. My doctor was just like kind of had a list of things I needed to eat to get my ecosystem back, and Red Table Meats was on the list.
Seriously?
Seriously, yeah. It was like yogurt, different Kalamata olives, blue cheese, Red Table Meats. Like,
awesome.
get back to health. All right. Well, I am your biggest fan, Mike Phillips, Red Table Meats. Everybody, if you want to just look at pictures of meat, you can certainly go to redtablemeatco.com. You can go up to Northeast to Kieran's Kitchen. I am I'm just crazy about this place. You know it. I had Kieran on right before they opened. And I just think we just need to value, promote, think about how great Minnesota meats, Minnesota charcuterie, Minnesota ham, like really good, important, life-changing stuff. We need to have a value-driven, quality-driven food system. We can't just ping around like crazy particles eating terrible things and feeling sad all the time. That's not what we're doing. This is what we're doing. Okay. So that's
feel good. Feel happy. Eat Red Table.
All right. Mike Phillips, thank you so much for coming in. We come back. We're going to have a few minutes for an Ask Me Anything. You got your questions. Text me 651-989-9226. That was fun. I didn't talk about the greatness of salami for all time. Young, fresh salami. I know it's kind of counterintuitive to think about that, but they can get too old. That is a thing. They get there's like a peak of flavor. You got to get in there. All right. So I got a question about, does it matter what olive oil you use when you're making your focaccia and your grandma pizzas? I mean, there's very expensive oils in the world. I think that they would just get lost. You're using, you know, the bright green, lovely stuff. In Italy, they tend to use a certain level of oil for cooking and then a certain better level for finishing at the table. So you want to go down that road. Yes, certainly can. I'm not going to stop you. You know, I don't think you don't want the worst oil because a lot of times that's not olive oil. So try to, you know, find a producer you you believe is actually olive oil. A lot of fraud in the world. I follow that sometimes. That is olive oil coming out of Italy. That's one of the ones where you're going to find some fraud, because guess what? The mafia is busy. So find a producer you believe is actually olive oil. I've been buying California oil lately. I think it's really excellent. And there's no particular I feel like the it's definitely olive oil. You can taste it. It's got that peppery, sagey note to it. All right, so what is happening in the world? What is happening here next week? Toni Tipton Martin, she has written an epic, a stunning, and amazing work of African-American culinary history. It's called Jubilee, Recipes from Two Centuries of African-American Cooking. It is the most historically researched and kind of groundbreaking book that I have read in years. It is just a landmark. I'm so excited to talk to her. So she will be on the phone with us next week. Hopefully you will be here too, because I will be. There's so much still to learn about food. It's just astonishing to me. I've been working in this universe for so long, and whole new realms open up when someone does work like this. So Toni Tipton Martin next week. All right, so what are you going to do till then? You got to start scanning your aisles for those Halloween candy bargains, my friend. And then you got to get to smashing your candies and putting them on cookies, because that's fun. All right, so go forth in sweet adventure, and I will meet you here next week on Off the Menu.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.